Vancouver Island, a land full of rich, diverse cultures where you will find hippies and rednecks at the same local brew pub, blue-collar and white-collar camping side-by-side at the lakes, and old and young and everyone in between with one thing in common, we love our island. This week on the Wild Islander podcast, we have my longtime friend Jacqueline Jansen, who is one of the few people who gets to say, I have run the length of Vancouver Island and have done lots of different solo journeys and experiences across this incredible place. I hope you enjoy stories from Jacqueline as she shares her journey on Vancouver Island. So, Jacqueline, I start many of my interviews this way because I love to be able to kind of look back on why the person across from me is here. And I had a lot of reasons why you were going to be one of the people I wanted to interview, because you're somebody who not only is passionate about the outdoors, but really passionate about the island, and have an incredible amount of experience exploring all sorts of places. And I think people are going to benefit from it. Are you excited for this or what?
I am. Yes. Excited and nervous.
That's good. That's kind of the point. So I guess we'll start off with a little bit of an introduction. This is Jacqueline Jansen. You've lived here most of your life. When was it that you guys moved here?
I believe I was 10.
Yeah.
Grade 5. How old are you in grade 5? I can't remember. I think around 10.
Yeah, you're 10. Yeah, yeah. Because Talon's grade 4 and he's 9. So yeah, he'd be 10.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, 10 years old. And then I remember you guys moving. So you lived down the street from like where the street does not sound right because there's Black Creek in the middle of,
not a normal city block street.
No, it's more of a road. But there was this property that I remember growing up, and it was like this old, was it old paper mill? What was it? A printing press or something.
There was a printing press in this building structure that was on the house, but structure that was on the property.
Yeah.
But it was never actually a place worth. I don't know how the printing press ended up there.
Well, we always visited this property because it had all these ponds, and I remember like hiking through because it was really, really overgrown. And then we heard that these people had moved in and were gonna like make a house out of it. And I remember basically laughing at the age of whatever I was. I must have been 12 at the time or something. Like, really? That place? They bought that place? Like, that was like not the haunted house, but it kind of had that feel. It was super run down, had paper, and these, I remember, had lead stamps all over the place that
we found those for years.
Oh yeah, yeah.
For
it was
years.
It was just one of those places that you're like, this, I don't see this being redeemed. And now you see what your family's done with it. It's like, oh my gosh.
We have a photo album that shows.
Do you guys really?
What it looked like when we bought it, or when my parents bought it, and throughout all the building steps, there's pictures along the way, and it's when people come to the house. That's one of the first things we pull out because it's the easiest way to explain the building.
What it is today, right? Like it's super, it's super unique, and I love that part of it. But the reason I bring it up is that the background and pieces that you have for being on the island, and I mean, you lived on a smaller island before that. You lived on Thetis, right?
Yeah.
And how long did you live on Thetis?
4.5 years.
So like the island life thing of living in there, what did you find like changed the most about moving to the Big Island?
The Big Island. You know what? I think the biggest thing for me was having a bigger community. Because on Thetis Island, there was one person my age. I went to a one-room schoolhouse. And, I mean, to move someplace where there was 11 people my age, 11 girls my age that were my closest friends. That we grew up doing everything together was so strange for me. But then there was a lot of similarities too. Like on Thetis Island, we lived outside. We spent all of our time outside. We lived in a teeny tiny house. It was under 1,000 square feet for 5 of us. My siblings and I, like, we shared a room. My parents' bedroom, there was room for the queen size bed, and that was it. Like, you could barely open the door.
Just so small.
Yeah.
And then moving into the project. So I'm trying to, do you guys live in a trailer for a while? How
we
did that work?
Sorry. We did live in a 23-foot trailer, the 5 of us, for, I don't know, probably like June until October.
Until you could get into the house. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So we spent another summer living outside completely.
Yeah. And I think that's something that was really unique about the area that we grew up in and the circle of people that we grew up in is that we all valued. I mean, if anybody's listened to the podcast so far and the different people that have been on, most of them have had that influence of we spend a lot of time outside. We did lots of adventures outside. All of our time outside, whether it was swimming in a pond, whether it was exploring through the bush or whatever it was that we had, that was a lot of our time spent. So then as the years went on, I mean, we did a couple different things with the circle of friends that we had and stuff like that, but I wouldn't say that outdoors was like your favorite thing in the entire world, maybe.
No, definitely wasn't.
No. So
not for a long time.
So at one point or another, it switched, and all of a sudden, here's Jacqueline, the avid outdoors woman. So what happened there? What changed for you?
You know what? I can't remember specifically like one thing that made it change. I think it was kind of gradual. Probably started with working at camp.
Mm.
Was one where I became a little more comfortable with being outside and just not being afraid of animals. And this was always the thing that I was like the most terrified of. As I was driving up here, I was thinking about, man, I remember at camp being afraid to go to the outhouse alone in the dark.
Mm.
I never went alone.
I mean, it was the dark, scary bush.
It was terrifying.
It's still a little unnerving.
And now to think that I go hike out where there's no cell service and spend the night by myself in the dark, I'm like, oh, that's I've come a long way from not wanting to walk the 20 feet to the outhouse in the middle of camp in the dark.
To like going to the remote places all over the place, doing all sorts of different adventures. That's incredible.
Completely by myself. There was one night where I was the only person on the mountain at night, and I almost didn't because I was like, this is terrifying. There's nobody else camped here tonight. Maybe I'll hike back to the car. And I was like, nope, I made it this far. I can do this. But yeah, thinking about the fact that at camp, as I don't know, how old was I when I started working at camp? 13, 14?
Probably, yeah. We usually were about 14 is when we would start as like leadership trainees and stuff.
Being terrified of going outside of the tent in the dark to where I am now, and it just, I think it was gradual. And listening to your first episode, actually talking about Albert Edward, that was the first mountain I hiked.
Mm.
And I did it, I was probably 16, and we did it as a group of friends. We did it in a day, and I think you were there that day.
I can't remember if I was there for that. I don't think I was there for that one.
I think you were, because I remember you hiking with a golf club.
Oh, yeah. No, that would have been me.
And a can of Coke for this summit.
Yeah,
you and
yeah,
Tyler.
Yeah. That
And Tyler carried my backpack down the mountain because I'd been in a car accident earlier that summer and I'd never hiked a mountain. And here we'd done like this crazy thing and I was slow and hurting. And Tyler was like, just let me take your backpack. And I was super stubborn. I was like, no. And he's like, Jacqueline, I'm just taking it. You're too slow. And then
we all need help sometimes.
Yeah. I think I've redeemed myself. Don't need someone to carry my backpack for me anymore right now.
So out of all the adventures that you have done, so like it's been really quite a pleasure to be able to watch you grow and watch the adventures. Like I think we text back and forth at least a couple times a year. We're like, where should I go next? What are we doing? You know, what would be fun? What are the kind of the top ones that you have found so far as you've been exploring? Maybe explain a little bit what you do, like when you're exploring it. You're not just hiking, but you're doing like a whole nother level.
Sometimes I'm hiking. Sometimes I'm trail running. So I got into trail running 2015 is, I think, when I first really started trail running. I'd started running in 2011 and did some half marathons. I did a full marathon. I ran the island.
Okay, well, we got to pause there for a second. Okay. 2014, right?
Yeah.
Embrace the Race. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, like, you say run the island, but I think that needs a little bit more attention than just run the island. Because I think of running the island and go, I'm dead, I'm dying, I made it to Port McNeil, yay me. But you ran the whole thing.
I did that one in a day.
Yeah.
From Port Hardy to Port McNeil was my first day of that, right?
Yeah, that'd be my first death. So like what did you, what was the motivation behind it? Tell me a little bit about that project.
So when I started nursing school, I started running a little more seriously, and I started training for a marathon. And in that training, I thought, man, I really, really enjoy this. What if I ran for a reason other than just for myself, for my enjoyment? And I mean, as Canadians, we all know Terry Fox. Mm-hmm. We know his story. And I thought,
kind of an annual thing, right?
Like Terry Fox, I could do something similar to what he did, raising money for a cause.
Sure.
I could, and I was thinking about it. This was all coming to mind while I was on a run. And I thought, well, nope, not doing the whole country. That's not an option. Mm. What's reasonable for me to do? And I was going to school in Nanaimo. I was like, well, maybe I'll run back to Black Creek. And then I was like, well, maybe a little further than that. That doesn't seem that far. And by the end of my run, I thought, I wonder how far it is from Port Hardy to Victoria. Mm. I got home, looked it up. I think it was 495 kilometers.
Yeah, it's somewhere around there. Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder how long it would take me to do that kind of distance, and what would I run for? Like, what cause would I be raising money for? And my dad has MS, and one of my really good friends, your cousin, actually has lupus.
Yeah, and my mom also has MS as well.
And
yeah.
Your mom. Yeah. At the time.
Probably not diagnosed at the time, though. You're right.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure.
I think maybe as I was training for it, that diagnosis was coming into fruition, into sight kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I ended up, I was like, how do I decide between these two things? And then I thought, well, if I'm creating this event, I can do it for whatever I want. I can do it for both.
Totally.
So I ran for both lupus and MS, and it evolved into this, like, what kind of distance a day makes it something that catches people's attention. And so it ended up being a marathon a day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2 days on, 1 day off, for 12 marathons over 17 days. And it was...
And a marathon's distance is 42.2.
So I think it ended up to 506 kilometers when it was the full 12 marathons.
Right.
And I did it over 17 days. And yeah, so from Port Hardy to Victoria, ended at mile zero, which was kind of that for me, because Terry Fox was the person who came to mind to end at that mile zero. The Terry Fox Monument was kind of an intentional choice for me to end there.
Absolutely. Bring it all full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was really neat, too, the way that it brought community together from one end of the island to the other. Because you had people partner with you and run. Like, I was searching through photos just recently, again, kind of recollecting that time. I remember you stopped by at camp. You stayed there for a night when we were there at Camp Bob. And it was just an amazing thing to watch along the way, like how you created community within the event. And I know that that happens naturally, but it also does take a special person to be able to pull that off. And it was so cool to see the vision that you had, not just be Jacqueline's doing something cool, but it came to people wanted to partner with you. People wanted to be a part of that and do that in this way.
And it was strangers, people I didn't know, which was very... something that was stretched me. It stretched me to engage with people I didn't know, and learning how to interact and all of those things too, and realizing that this island that we live on is just a very unique community.
Yeah.
And you know, at the last day, having people show up who had I had no idea they'd been following my story the entire time, and realizing the impact that it had on them, to the point where they came to celebrate that finish line with me. And because it was the island, it's this very iconic picture as well, from one end to the other. And it's something that, I mean, how many times have you driven that distance, right? Like, you go, oh, this is a long way.
Oh, absolutely. I've walked small, tiny stretches of it. But what I've found fascinating is that you possess something inside the memory of that very, very few people have. Because when you experience a place and you hike and you go for a walk or whatever, there's just a different pace, but you just notice more.
Yeah.
Right? So when you did that, I want to kind of cherry pick, like, what were some of the most beautiful areas that you got to be, like, that you ran through?
You know what? There's certain days that I don't even remember because it was, I was so focused on running. But I think the North Island was the most beautiful. And I spent that time running alone as well. The first 3 days I ran by myself, those first 3 days.
And it's very remote wilderness areas there too, right? Very remote. Yeah, there's not much there.
And I think it was the fourth day that somebody came and joined me. But for those first 3 days, I got to just relax and settle into the event. So it was tough, but it was also, I think, really good to just have that time to find my pace, find my rhythm. And I think that was one of the times, the first times for me, that I realized how many mountains we have on the island. You don't think about it often, or I didn't think about it often living in Black Creek. You just, you
know, such a condensed,
there's Mount Washington and Miracle Beach.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we live. It's, you know, a few little mountains on the island, and up north you're in these mountains and you're running between them, and it's so much hillier than I expected it to be.
it's one thing, and when you're going in that beautiful little car of yours, you know, and driving up and over there, like, oh, it's not so bad.
And you think,
like,
north to south is downhill, right?
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's definitely not.
Yeah, you start at the top and you work your way down. It's just a downhill. It's not that bad.
Yeah, no, not so much. And I mean, during that run, I learned so much about pacing myself and enjoying where I am, and not just thinking about the distance or the destination, or not being event-driven so much as process-driven.
Sure. Enjoying that journey opposed to, like you're saying, the destinations and
milestones. Yeah, and that's something that I've then carried over into ultra trail running. So anything longer than a marathon distance, which is 42.2 kilometers, is considered an ultra. So if you ran 45, if you ran 100 kilometers, like, those are all considered ultras.
It's just, I was,
like,
going to ask the designation.
A blanket statement.
Yeah.
For ultra is anything greater than a marathon.
Is there, like, an industry standard? Doesn't sound quite right, but is there, like, a respected number within the word ultra?
You know what? I don't know. I would guess that 50 kilometers is probably the first ultra,
kind of the benchmark that you would recommend.
Yeah, like most ultra marathons, the minimum is 50 to be considered an ultra, I think.
Right.
Generally speaking, they don't do, like, 43 kilometers is longer than a marathon.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you are an ultra marathoner. I think usually, because 50 is one of those big round numbers that people
die at. Yeah, the ones that people die at.
Yeah,
no, the normal human beings are like, I made it 50 kilometers and I can't feel my legs, I can't feel my arms, and I think I might just lay here and die. That would be me for 50
kilometers. You'd be surprised at how much your body's capable of.
Well,
because I remember not being able to run up our driveway, which is 300 meters probably. I remember trying to, like, run to your guys' house. I couldn't do it. I thought I was going to die. And then I went from that to, I mean, these crazy other distances that I've been able to accomplish. And it's something that I never thought I'd be able to do, and something that I've grown into and learned to just settle into a pace. It can be a fast pace sometimes. It can be walking sometimes. I mean, for an ultra, you don't run the entire thing. Like, people have this picture, like, oh, you ran an ultra marathon, you've run a marathon. I'm like, well, if you consider running a marathon running the entire time, I've never run a marathon.
Right.
I've always stopped to walk.
And that's a great description, because that is usually the picture that I would have in my head. Be like, oh man, I don't want to run for 42 kilometers. Are you kidding me? I can't do that. Who can do that? Well, Jacqueline could do that, but that's really good to hear. Like,
no,
that's
walk. Part of it.
Yeah.
And I had my sister-in-law had said to me when she was training for an event, like, oh, I don't want to fail. And I was like, well, what do you consider failing? She goes, well, I don't want to walk. I said, okay, do you think that I've failed the things that I've run? She's like, no. I said, well, I've never run a marathon by those standards then, because I've always stopped to walk up a hill, to walk through an aid station, to do something, because your body needs that break as well. I mean, for those people who run like races, the Olympics, no, they run the entire time because they like that is the purpose, the speed. Mine is
pushing the limits,
covering of human the capability. Distance at whatever pace it is that works.
I think that's a beautiful principle to have for just about any outdoor adventure that you can have is learning how to pace yourself. And there's always going to be those few that are super inspiring that, you know, like we talked about with Rachel and Nathan, we were talking about the Sabre canoe route and about these dudes that were like trying to outdo themselves for this 40 kilometer plus route, right? And they're paddling it hard. And then there's those that are going to take a week and enjoy it and having that pace. But I think that it's really important to find what yours is. And you only find that by spending time in those adventures. So shifting gears a little bit into that, you mentioned mountain peaks and stuff like that. You've gotten into a little bit more of that trail running stuff. Where are some of the places that you visited on the island for trail running, specifically with maybe some summits involved with it as well?
I have done Albert Edward. I think I've run it three times maybe.
And you've done the Castle Craig Frank Loop as well?
Yes. Yeah. So I did that one last summer for the first time, and I did it by myself. I had wanted, I would love to be able to do one day from the parking lot, the loop and back. But because I was doing it by myself and I was not super trained, I hiked up to Circlet Lake, camped there, and then I'd planned to do the loop and then do a second night at Circlet and then hike back. And I think that loop from Circlet is around 20 kilometers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about that.
So I did the, Castle Craig first and then Frank. And then in my mind, I had said to myself, my goal is to do three, like hit the three summits, but to get to the summit of Albert Edward, it's kind of a side trip a little more. So then, I mean, to summit Castle Craig is also a little bit of an out and back off the loop. But I told myself, because I was doing it alone, if I get to that turn off point and I don't feel like I can summit and come back, I'm just going to call it. And that's fine. And so I had that goal, but I also had the other goal of getting back.
Yeah.
Okay. By myself.
Yeah.
And it was a super foggy day as well. So at multiple times I stopped and I go, is this too foggy? Can I see the trail well enough, or do I need to turn back and head back over what's familiar? And I had goals, but at the same time, I also don't have to complete those goals in order to feel like I've accomplished something.
Right.
And having one of the big things that I've learned is that to get out and not accomplish those summits is not a failure. Because I got out.
Yep.
And learning to just enjoy the process and the journey and the learning and the development that comes with adventuring is something that my Embrace the Race run really taught me. Because in my training for that, I had been, you know, pushing and running and running and running, and I didn't want to walk. I was like, I got to run the whole thing. And it's like, Jacqueline, you're going to go from one end of the island to the other. Even if you walked the entire thing and the goal had been to run, no one is going to say you're a failure if you've stopped to walk.
Yeah.
You might, but nobody else will. And learning that I need to take those expectations off myself has been really good for me in life in general.
Sure. You get to enjoy the moments a little bit better, right?
I
find that we can get so lost in that, especially, you know, in adventure. Yes, daily life as well, where you're just missing the point, that you're not experiencing the now, right? There's a whole bunch of things that you can unpack from that. But it's such an incredible gift when you can go into the outdoors, especially, and you can experience it at a pace where you're not just looking at the next marker.
Yeah, and realizing that my purpose in getting out isn't to, you know, count summits or kilometer numbers or any of that. It's really just to enjoy being out. And I just feel so privileged that this is my home. And I don't even know how many times I have said out loud to myself or to others, I can't believe I live here, that this is my home, that this island, with all that it has to offer, from mountain peaks to like ocean trails. Like, I did the West Coast Trail a few years ago as well. And like, the diversity of this island is so incredible. And to be able to get out at all is just such a privilege.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know you did the West Coast Trail.
Yeah,
I had forgotten about that part. Oh, what? Did you do that one over a multiple day trip?
Yeah, obviously? That was my first solo backpacking trip that I ever did. I'd wanted to get into backcountry camping alone because I work shift work, and it is impossible for my schedule to line up with anybody else's.
Sure.
It's so unpredictable. It's like changes every week.
Mm-hmm.
And I had found the previous summer, I missed out on so many camping trips with friends because my shift schedule didn't allow for me to go with people or for people to come with me when I had free time. And I was like, I gotta learn to just be comfortable in going out alone so that I'm not missing out, because I really don't like missing out and I want to go to these places and see these things. But I wasn't confident enough to do it by myself. And so a friend of mine also had a similar goal. And so we did a solo but together camping trip where we packed all of our own stuff. So we each packed our own stove and our tent, and there was no shared gear between us. And we went out and did 50-40
very together. Cool.
And, you know, we both had our little one-man tents. Yeah. And, you know, she forgot some things, I forgot some things. And it all worked out because we were together.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was that test of, can I carry all my own gear? Am I capable of carrying that amount of stuff? Because when you think about, oh, you know, I carry half of a two-man tent when I'm with a friend, but half of a two-man tent and a full one-man tent is a different weight. And realizing like, oh, they have half the food, I have half the food. And like all of those things, you go, okay, when I put it all in my bag, it ends up being a heavier bag than when you split it with two people. And so we had done that one. I want to say I'd done another similar kind of trip with somebody, but I honestly can't remember. And then the two of us were supposed to do the West Coast Trail together, and then her schedule didn't work with mine. And so I decided, okay, I'm gonna do it by myself. And so I had planned to do it over, how many days did I do it over? I think I did it over 6 nights or 7 nights. I didn't hike very long every day.
No, I mean, in the distances that you're accustomed to.
And like, I'm someone who, you know, get up in the morning, get packed, get out of there. I was often the first person to leave camp in the morning and the first person to get to camp. So I got the cream of the crop camp spots every night and spent the afternoon sitting on the beach, reading a book in the sun. I had the most beautiful week when I went. It rained the first day and then was hot and sunny the entire week.
Love it.
I
love the incremental growth structure that you put into adventuring. And I think that's, I want to pick that out and just unpack that a little bit, because that's a really important step to anybody's adventure, career, portfolio, and whatever you want to call it. But it's a really, really key part that if you don't, if you try to skip that, that's usually where the accidents happen.
Yes.
Right. That's usually when the bad situations that you hear about on these other, on the news, or Sartek is going to come in and get you out, because you haven't done that incremental growth. And so whether that's a mentor, that's somebody that's pouring into you and saying, here's how you can do that. You know, that's like last week when I was with Sean doing caving, that was the whole point, was that I don't have the tools to be able to do this safely or well, but he does. So I'd like to go with him so that I can learn, so that I can start passing that on to my kids and other people that I want to be able to bring into the wilderness. You did that by going and saying, here's a way that we can do this safely with somebody else, because it's something you want to ultimately do. It's a goal.
Yeah.
And I think there's a bit of controversy around the whole solo hiking thing sometimes, right? You'll hear people, and I'm sure you've had people that be like, what are you thinking?
That's so dangerous.
It's so dangerous. You should never do that, right? And so there is that tension, because yes, is the risk higher in some ways? Yes.
Yeah.
Right? There is more risk. But can you calculate that risk into your adventure? Can you make decisions that are going to help you build the foundations to do that well? Because should it be eliminated just because it has risk? Well, we wouldn't do anything.
Yeah. There's a lot of things in my life I wouldn't have done if I eliminated them because of the risk.
Exactly. Exactly. But I love the calculated steps that you took. So I'm going to shift gears just a little bit with it, but it's still relevant. What are some of the key components to your gear that you found that maybe changed being solo and doing a lot of solo hikes? What changed for you there?
That's a good question. I think I bought lighter gear. Switching out a Therm-a-Rest with the foam in it to just an air mattress.
Right.
Packs up to half the size and half the weight.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? Having, a stove, a smaller pot, a stove, like the... Oh my goodness, like the pocket rocket. What do you call that piece?
Yeah, smaller stoves, yeah, more compact.
That, all packs in and fits together. And one of the big things for me that I got was a mini InReach because that gave me peace of mind.
Yeah, and your family and friends
my
family. Too.
My parents. Yes. When I got it, I told my parents, I'm actually getting this for you just as much as I'm getting it for me.
It's one of those things you're like, I never hope to use this. It's like first aid training. Yeah. I never want to have to use this, but if I do, it's a good thing to have.
I started taking poles with me.
Mm.
That was something that when I started doing longer distances on trail, I started taking as well, because if you injure yourself and you're alone, you can find a stick, but to have a pole to brace, to whatever, to hold up a tarp or anything. So that's something that I always take with me. I don't always use, but I always take with me.
Did you find, there's a bit of a bunny trail, mm-hmm. with poles, did you find a significant change in your hike when you use them? I know I did. I mocked people for years, and for all of those people that were in my life that I mocked because you used poles, I'd almost say 30%. It made a big difference, especially going downhill. It's like, man, this isn't so bad. $40 bucks at Costco, you can have these nice little poles that are robust and gonna work for the most part. And I was really quite impressed.
Yeah,
I'm getting older. I get that, but still, I think that there's more to it.
Yeah, I have really light ones that I use for trail running, and they collapse like a tent pole. They're a collapsible, not the telescope.
They're not the telescoping ones.
Yeah. They fold into threes, so it's a set length that you have.
Buy it specifically to your size. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And I find for trail running, I notice them going uphill is when I use them. But for hiking, I use them more for going down. But going uphill for trail running, especially the longer distances when you're not running up the hills. You're hiking up the hills in the ultras. But I get to a point where my legs are just exhausted.
Mm.
But then you can use your arms to help haul yourself up the mountain.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I did notice a difference for sure. And then coming down with a pack, you just shift that weight off of your legs.
Yeah.
And, take some of that on your arms instead. And
pro tip. Use poles if you can, if you
poles.
Want to.
And find light ones, light but sturdy.
Not so much golf clubs.
No, maybe not.
Hey, they were fun. My number five
better than
iron.
Nothing.
I used that thing for years. It was great.
And it's something that in groups too, I learned to take them with me. Just because a friend had said, we had an instance where someone needed their leg splinted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's sturdier and straighter than a stick that you can find.
Yeah.
And that's what actually a safety piece as well as beneficial, makes
it's
the hike easier.
It's got multi-uses, absolutely.
What else do I have in my solo kit? I don't know.
Those are
are the main things.
Yeah.
The learning to pack light.
Mm.
Having light gear, exchanging some of my luxury items for lighter pieces.
There's always that cut block list every time, right? You lay everything out and you're like, nope, you go, nope. That's why truck camping's really bad for me, because then all of a sudden the entire vehicle is overflowing and my buddies are like, really? You're going to bring all that? Yeah. Like, yeah, I had the option. When you do an alpine trip somewhere, you're like, I have to cut out all these other things.
And you're like, I'm going to wear the same stinky set of clothes every single day. And then you learn to have your hiking clothes and your at camp clothes. Your at camp clothes are stay like clean and dry. And you put on your cold, damp clothes every day before you go hiking. Mm. But, and that was something that I was like, okay, I cut out the extra t-shirts, the extra, learning to cut those things out, I think has
made a big difference.
As I've done longer. I mean, the West Coast Trail was the longest one that I did. But I was able to pack pretty light for it. Everything inside my bag.
And you know, at the end of it, you're like, well, I didn't reuse that. So, yeah, you know, and it wasn't a safety thing. So out it goes.
Yeah.
So another question I had for you, because we're getting close to the end here. I know time flies.
I know.
It's crazy. But one thing that I noticed when we did Albert Edward this last year was how many female solo hikers there were, or in groups, compared to when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And like, it was when I hiked as a kid, it was primarily men. I do not remember very, 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 very few women. And if they were, they were always in a group. But it was really, really cool how many people we passed. There's like either a pair of women who are hiking together. Have you noticed, I mean, you're part of that because you're part of a new generation, I think, of people that are just going like, we're going to go and do this. And especially for women, I think it's been amazingly, like, you look at the charts of any adventure activity out there, and women by far is the biggest area of growth every time. Hmm. Whether you're hunting, whether you're hiking, whether you're fishing, like, it is the biggest area of growth, which is absolutely phenomenal. I absolutely love. And you've been a part of that in the way that you've been doing that here. Have you noticed a growth like in that area here on the island from when you kind of started?
I think so.
Sure.
I think it's something that I've like you said, I've been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things, like, you know, when you get a new vehicle and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, there's another one of the same vehicle and there's another one. And so you see it more when you are in it.
Sure. That's, as well. That's fair.
So I don't know if I noticed it so much when I wasn't in it.
Mm.
But yeah, I think it's something that I have the privilege of people saying, oh, I wish I could do it. And I'm like, you can do it, right? And people say, oh, I wish I could do what you could do or what you do do. And I was like, well, you can. Mm. I never thought that I could. And I've been able to introduce people to it as well. And I think there's this mindset now of women can do it as opposed to, you know, women don't do it.
Yeah.
It's not a ladylike thing to do, or it's not, women aren't strong enough, or they're not tough enough to do it, and they're not brave enough.
Mm.
I'm like, well, actually we are.
Absolutely.
And it's something, like, running for me is something that has changed who I am.
Mm.
It's taken me from someone who had no confidence in themselves to someone who has the courage to do things that I thought were impossible for me. And I think that there, just in the world in general, there's a lot more empowerment for women out there.
Mm-hmm. And the momentum's there, right? And so fabulous to see.
Yeah. And you see it and you go, man, that's badass. I want to do that.
Totally.
And you see other women do and you go, oh, I can do that.
Mm.
And while I'm out there, I will admit, I run by some people and I listen and they go, goodness, she's by herself.
Mm.
That's so cool. And I go, oh yeah. Yeah, I'm one of those people.
But there's
and
a journey to get there, right? It's not something that just happens overnight. It's like there's a process that you've gone through.
And I was out with some friends last night and they're like, man, I wish I could do that. I'm like, you can.
Mm.
But why don't we try and plan something where we do it that solo together kind of thing?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important part of gaining the confidence to do it, is that development of with a big group, with a smaller group, as a pair, and then learning to do it by yourself, and then having that that piece where you go, if I don't summit, it's not a failure.
Mm.
And having that grace for yourself in it as well.
Yeah.
And realizing that, no, you're winning if you get out there at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be able to share these stories. And I really hope people are as inspired as I am by your journey, because I've continually, like, having been able to be a part of your life in a small way, being able to watch the journey, because I've been one of the privileged few that actually is, you know, seeing it firsthand. But I think that it's really valuable what you're putting out there. Like, everybody can do it, but it's not about running the ultra. It's not about running the island. It's not about necessarily even exactly what you've done. It's a scalable thing.
Yeah.
And it can be as simple as walk your community park, you know, whatever it is. Do more than maybe what you're doing right now, because there's benefit. And I know that that's a huge part of your own mental health and your own opportunity to be able to continue to push yourself and grow and be able to do that. So, yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story and your impact on the island and its impact on you. There's, like I've said before, there's that reciprocal relationship that that we're exploring, and I really thank you for taking the time to share it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Awesome. It is always such a privilege to be able to hear people's stories, and Jacqueline's is absolutely fabulous to hear what she has accomplished and where she has gone and how she has grown in the journey of exploring the outdoors. I'm thankful for Jacqueline's experience and that we could do that here together. If you would like to follow along on some of Jacqueline's Instagram stories and different adventures that she's going to be on, you can follow her at explorer.of.truth.beauty. And you can see all of the different places that she's going to be adventuring in the future and those that she's been in the past. Thanks again for joining us here on the Wild Islander. Hope you guys have a fabulous week. We will see you next Wednesday.